Hello and welcome to episode 84 of the Card Hoarder Podcast, your weekly source for Magic Online news, community, and finance. You can find the show every week on iTunes, MTGCast, and of course, our home site, cardhoarder.com, where you can check out other content like Magic Online guides, now being translated into Portuguese. Be sure to check out cardhoarder.com for buying and selling Magic Online singles with round-the-clock customer service. My name is Connor, I'm the host and editor for the podcast, joined as I am always by my two co-host. First up from Card Hoarder, Nathaniel. Hello, how's it going?
It's going great. I'm in my sort of vintage Masters euphoric period right now. I've been playing a lot. I'm actually in the middle of one now. If we weren't doing this right now, I'd probably be playing vintage Masters, trying to squeeze one or two more in before it all ends tomorrow. So I'm in a great mood, and I've enjoyed it very much.
It's the kind of behavior I would expect from Dave, draft while podcasting, but...
Enjoying things? I don't think so.
Oh. So also joining me from Ireland, the Ayatollah of Rock and Rolla, Dave C. Hello, Dave. How's it going?
Hey, Connor. That's quite the nickname to live up to. I don't know if I'm able for that.
Well, you always give me wrestling nicknames, so now I'm going to start giving you wrestling nicknames since it's the podcast that I host.
No, that's fair. How are you, Connor?
Not doing too bad. Same thing with Nathaniel. I was just really excited to play some Magic. I hadn't played some Magic in a couple weeks, but Vintage Masters, I played a total of 10 drafts. Which
nice.
Yeah, it's been a fun couple weeks. It's been a fun year. 2017's wrapping up. It's time for our year in review for Magic Online and the game as a whole. So we're going to, of course, run down our top five most impactful changes on Magic Online and share our favorite sets, cards, mechanics, and a few other things from 2017, and we'll do that later on in the show. So before we get into the top five, though, we have to share some honorable mentions, and we're going to have to start with Vintage Masters, because we have to talk more about this format, even though we talked about, 45 minutes about this format last episode. Yeah. I thought that was great, by the way. That was fun.
That was a lot of fun. It's one of my probably top five draft sets of all time as well.
I don't know if it was cracked the top five for me, but it's definitely up there.
It's definitely in the top two for me. I'm just hedging because I can't remember if there's one I enjoyed back way back in the day, like Onslaught or something. But I love it. I love it. Love it.
I mean, I ended up doing 10 drafts, and that's actually a lot for me. In 1 week, too. That's actually a lot.
I know. I know. I felt a lot of pressure to have to do it, too, because... I think it was during last episode where I found out, it was either that or shortly before, that it was only 1 week and not two. And I was like, well, I better get some work in here before it gets taken away from me again.
It's just such a balanced format.
Yeah.
I think is what keeps bringing me back to it. Like, it has these super aggressive decks like Goblins and Tokens, and Battle Screech is a stupid, stupid common. But there's like sweepers in the format. There's just decent sweepers, and there's like unfair decks. There's like combo decks that don't care how fast you're going. It's going to win on turn four if you don't disrupt it. And guess what? Battle Screech is not the best disruptive card in the format. One Famine and these decks fold because they're designed in a way that you have to overcommit to the board. And there's like a bunch of archetypes I forgot about. We did like an archetype breakdown and there's at least three of them that I've drafted that I forgot about that were just great. I don't know. Nothing can't be beaten. And everything is just a possibility. There's a decent just power level going through the whole team.
I think there's also just something for everyone. There's great aggro decks, there's great combo decks, and there's great like control decks. And I think the fact that it has something for everybody and it's balanced really makes it a sweet format. And then, I mean, I don't know if you guys ended up opening up any power, but that felt real fun to open up the power, especially the old one, and knowing that it's worth like more than your draft or two drafts even in some cases. I happened to open the Black Lotus in my first draft. So lucky. And I also got a Mox Emerald in a different one. I 3-0'd both.
Wow.
I 3-0'd both that I had power. The one where I had the Mox Emerald, I also had a Monocrypt. Is that the one that it's zero and you pay two?
Yeah.
So I, on turn one, played Goblin Settler and destroyed the guy's land with the Mox and the Monocrypt. I did, and then I did it again the next game. I'm like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And then I ended up losing that game, the second one, but I won the match. But those cards are, I mean, that's the fun thing. It's like it's something worth a ton of money, and it is absolutely busted. as is like Soul Ring. There's a lot of really powerful fast mana cards.
I forgot about Soul Ring. And yeah, that's one of the big reasons why we're talking about this as an honorable mention. We're not just being selfish. Oh, we like to play this set, blah, blah, blah. But this set did have effects on the secondary market. So, I mean, some of the prices for the regular cards have already kind of started to recover now that the format is going away. But we had an interesting discussion about what the old art power is going for. And Nathaniel and Dave, you want to talk a little bit how rare these cards are?
Yeah, well, it's only up for a week, so I don't know the rarity of the normal ones, but I've heard numbers like only a playset or slightly more of the foil ones being out there. The normal ones are still kind of rare, and they're still worth... Don't take money that's the same price as a normal one. They're worth double at the moment of what their normal versions are worth. And my advice would be, there's a bit of risk to this, but hang on to them. As long as they don't print them in treasure chests, these cards will go up in price.
Yeah, if Lee and Chris are listening, I would say, please don't put these. Keep something sacred and don't put them in the treasure chest. And instead, definitely do this in an annual thing. Like they do the Vintage Cube. Like do a Vintage Masters with this version of the Power 9 in it. Like once a year or twice a year even. You know, Christmas in July, you can call it. And whatever. Make it special and don't just like... The treasure chests are their own thing, but I keep one thing out of it, and I think it makes it be such a great draft format anyway. And just having that sort of automatically, like getting like a couple free drafts, is great. It's like a nice fun thing for people to do. I have no idea how much money they made. It seems like there was quite a few people in it, and I was in the non Phantom one. So hopefully they won't put them in, but that it is absolutely a risk. If they don't, it does seem like a pretty good investment. And we talk about collectors not really being around on Magic Online. I still think that they are there to some degree as vintage players. And maybe that's because vintage players just love the bling, or they love the old cards. A lot of them play paper and they have the old art, and this is the only way to get it. So I think there's demand there. And, you know, talking about the scarcity of the foils, I straight up have not seen a foil on any bot at any point in time since it started. So they must be really, really hard to come by. Probably not even really a secondary market price for them, although I'm sure people will buy them for something, but it's just kind of a unique situation. We used to have those a lot, and they aren't there anymore. So it'd be nice if we could keep just this little part of Magic Online, keep that part a little bit special. That would be what I would ask for Christmas from Magic Online.
Well, even like one of the only downsides I would have to having this is it's so expensive to draft. And without the alternate arts, there's not a lot of cards you can open that are worth more than the draft. I think there's two if you don't have the alternate arts. So imagine next time, say you bring this out same time next year, or even like 2 years from now. But let's say they bring it out for Christmas again next year. And then all of a sudden that downside's gone because these cards will have gone up by so much money. You're now probably going to, like, if you open the Black Lotus, it's probably 100 ticks at that stage if there's only a handful of alternate art ones out there. And yeah, I'd like something on Magic Online. I think I'll echo your sentiment. I'd like something on Magic Online still to be special.
Yeah. Yep. Definitely a lot of positives coming out from this, and we'll see when they bring this format back. So before we go away from Vintage Masters, though, we have to point out that Nathaniel won the Storm Challenge. You managed to 3-0 with the Storm deck. I only drafted it once, unfortunately. Of course, went 1-2. I lost to Caleb on his screen. Yeah, it was embarrassing because my deck was really bad. And I was more mad because I had a good record of like battling against popular streamers on Magic Online. And this was I beat like 4 or 5 like pretty well-known streamers. And this was, I finally lost. And it was a pretty tight 3 games, but he had a really good Goblin deck that he really aggroed me out. Dave, you said Famine was a good card. Game 3, I could not cast Famine because I was at 3 life. So it does not win every game that you can cast it.
I had Famine in my board most of the time. I boarded it in here and there. But for when I was trying to draft the Storm decks, because when it works, it's so fun. It's really fun. And people are just kind of like, wow. And if you can get Yawgmoth's Will, which I did not, it's really hard to lose. I often ended up with a great Storm deck without Brainstorm or... or not Brainstorm, Brain Freeze, without the win condition, effectively.
All right, well, moving on from Vintage Masters, we have a couple other honorable mentions before we get into our list. I have Playpoint Bundles as an honorable mention as well. I think it's just like too soon to feel the effects of this promotion. What do you guys think?
Yeah, we might also never feel it. It might never come back. Maybe it's failed. Maybe it's don't. It'll be until next year until we really get to grips with that.
I would say I probably overreacted to it in hindsight. Mm-hmm. I still don't like the precedent, but, you know, in effect, it decreased the ticket price by like 2%. So
that was a part of that I was alluding to, that we'll have to see what the precedent is for the future.
Right.
And if they do anything like this. So,
yeah,
I think that's why it's too soon.
Yeah, fair enough.
I guess we defending Nathaniel a bit, like, you're always scared because everything is so connected on Magic Online.
Oh, yeah.
Like, every other game can just go, yeah, we have a special bundle on and no one cares. No one cares any other online game. But because the economy is so carefully connected, it's so hard for them to do something like this without getting criticized.
Guys, I have to admit, though, I actually purchased one of the bundles.
with actual money?
With actual money. I wanted to play Vintage Masters that bad.
So which bundle did you get?
Oh, I'm not going to say it.
Why?
That's the most expensive one. That's definitely the most expensive one.
I bought into the most expensive
one. That's good. I mean, I thought if you're a player and you're going to play some drafts, you know, and you're playing a format where 2-1 doesn't get you your stuff back so you can go again, it seems like a great deal. So I was more worried about the implication. But it seems like a good deal. I assume you're happy with the purchase, like got a discount and
yeah, it's gonna pay for my Magic Online planes for the next year, I would think, because it'll probably just be for Constructed, and because I'm gonna play a lot of Modern next year because I have a couple of big tournaments that I'm gonna play for. So I figured, might as well just do this because I'm gonna play Modern anyways next year. So. Yeah. Might as well.
I probably would have done that too had I not had random play points all over on random bot accounts from back in the day.
All right, one last honorable mention that we actually forgot to put on the list, so it probably warrants putting on the list. We weren't exactly sure, but earlier in the year, Wizards reduced the number of deck lists that they posted. So this more affects kind of the real world and like the Pro Tour metagames. Although, I mean, it does affect a lot of things on Magic Online, too. So, definitely a big thing and part of the game. It still is a big part of the game. We still want more information. So, this is a big one. I wish we didn't forget.
This is something that's going to have ramifications on Magic as a whole for a while. And it's hard to say because we're coming, and we're going to talk about this later on the cast, but we're coming from a period of Standard Magic that's been one of the most broken of all time. We currently have a deck that could probably be banned. Like, we currently have a dominant deck that's putting up Cobblade numbers, and if the next set doesn't fix it, they're probably going to have to ban cards from it. We've had three other decks banned out of existence, essentially, over the last year, year to year and a half. So we're coming from this super dominant part of Standard. So it's hard to tell, is Standard bad because these cards were bad, or is there a restriction of information stopping this? We've also come off 2 or 3 Pro Tours now in a row where really predictable decks were there. And I think part of that, and I was part of one of these Pro Tours, part of that is because we don't have a lot of information. We know what the best deck is, but we don't necessarily know what other decks are doing well enough to beat the best deck, which makes a lot of people default to Mono Red in Kyoto was one of the big ones where we knew that was a deck from day one on Modo, and we never really saw anything that could put up a fight against it. But is that because, as I said, Standard hasn't been great over the last year and a half, or is that because the restriction of information... We don't know. This is a couple-year process, not just a...
I think it's a little bit of both.
Yeah, it could definitely also just be both. So this is really influential to the outside world, and even if we were making the list, I think I would have kept it off the main list because it's more of a real-life effect. I don't think it's going to affect Modo in any serious way in the future. Besides, I guess, people playing PTQs, they want more deck lists, but yeah.
Yeah, if you're a glass-half-full kind of person... You hope that this is them staving off the next until rotation because it takes so long to fix when they've printed overpowered mechanics and things like that that require bannings. And I'm sure they're really hoping they don't have to ban anything. They're trying to restrict information to like almost limp past the finish line until, you know, they seem to have invested a lot of resources into like playtesting. In a different way, they've been hiring a lot of pros, it seems like. I forget what the R&D team associated with the play testing is called. But so we hope that they're going to just fixing this moving forward, which means like 2 years from now or whatever. So hopefully once we reach that point, the development of the sets will be better such that they can embrace information sharing. And not to, like, bring it back to Vintage Masters, but, you know, it's a known format, but it's balanced. And that's what we need. And we need, you know, when a format becomes known, it is balanced and therefore still fun, which I assume is quite difficult to do. But hopefully the R&D process will make that a massive priority, because I think that ultimately that's what will grow the game, make Wizards more money, and everybody more happy.
Yeah, it's definitely attainable. I mean, we could probably talk about this, the Vintage Masters format, probably for another 40 minutes. Because there's a lot of things that, like, I have changed my opinions on that we could just go ad nauseum about.
Yeah, I didn't want to bring it back to that, just as an example of, you know.
That's a good point. I like that as an example. Yep. All right, well, let's get into our top five most impactful changes to Magic Online. So, number five, Worth Leaving Wizards. This is one I actually forgot about until, I think this was very early in the year. And he had been the longtime kind of face of Magic Online. And this year, we've also just kind of seen a general shakeup of Wizards personnel. Helene Bergeau was another staple figure that also left Wizards. And this is a change that doesn't really have the obvious impact compared to, say, something like Vintage Masters affecting the economy with adding, like, collectible things to the market. This is more indicative that the change is coming from a macro level instead of a micro level. I have Worth at number five, or Worth Leaving at number five.
And now there's no one else to blame anymore, because we would always blame Worth, and now, I mean, I guess just blame Lee. It just doesn't have the same sort of ring to it.
I don't know who has stepped up either. That's the thing about both these positions. These were very vocal people who took a lot of the blame of both communities on their shoulders. They were kind of the face of the brand. And I don't know who technically has their job now. Lee is very vocal and now takes a lot of the brunt of Magic Online things. I see him getting added on Twitter and infinite things that are none of his business and have nothing to do with him, which is probably very annoying for him, but kind of funny. So I don't know if they've just decided to erase these roles, these aren't necessary roles, and that's why these people are let go, or are people doing this work, they're just not major social,
social media presence. Suspect it's the latter, that they have people in those positions and they just aren't in the public face the same way. I mean, Worth was very public about stuff, and I think that both Chris and Lee do a lot of the stuff that he did, but I think there's someone in charge of, like, maybe it's in charge of Magic Digital Next or something that would be the equivalent. It's always been a little murky as to, especially for Magic Online, like, what the corporate structure is. I have had no idea and still have no idea what it is. But, you know,
Does it really matter, though?
It doesn't.
I think just more the point, again, it's just the macro level change of, we are changing the focus. We are changing the, I can't think of the word here. Just the.
I totally agree with you. It was a shock to me. I couldn't believe that it was going down.
Just the mantra. They're changing things on coverage. Mm-hmm. Like everything has been changing. The new president is a new president of Wizards of the Coast.
Yeah,
which was like a.
It was an ex Microsoft.
That was the end of last year, right? I think.
Yeah.
Right. So just after that, we've kind of seen a butterfly effect, or we've seen just a...
Which is not uncommon, you know, when someone else comes in at the helm, you know, they have their peoples from other places, they have their ideas, which may or may not go, you know, mesh well. They might have scapegoats for various things that didn't go well. It's pretty common in the corporate world for it to happen, but it doesn't mean that it's not a big deal. And Worth was, aside from Lee to a lesser extent, was sort of the face of Magic Online for a long, long time. So, you know, whether or not he was running Magic Online is still unclear to me, but he certainly was in the eyes of the public. So him leaving is definitely a big impactful change on Magic Online, at least from our perspective.
All right, next impactful change, number four, Magic Online challenges were introduced. I have this on the list mainly just for the formats that didn't have a big scale non-league events like Modern and Standard. So Pauper, Legacy, and Vintage, those formats finally get events longer than five rounds and have decklist posting to allow further growth in the format. And it's really not much else to say with these. It's kind of a change that it's hard to think about what Magic Online was without these.
This just seemed like a bit of a natural progression from leagues. Like, as you said, it's hard to imagine Magic Online without them, because we used to have dailies and we used to have dailies and
premier events. We used to have dailies, 64-man drafts.
We used to have dailies and premier events, so we had two different types of grinding events. Now we have leagues, which is the biggest improvement of Magic Online maybe ever. And this is the natural progression of that. You have to have leagues and you have to have a weekend event. I think it's absolutely perfect. I would love to see little kick-ons of that. Like, I was throwing around the idea of, would it be cool if people got buys if they have certain rating and stuff like that. But this seems like such a intuitive, natural thing to kick on from the old system that, as you said, it's hard to imagine a time when there was leagues and no challenges.
Yeah, it feels like so long ago. I was like, oh, is that this year? I know when they first came out, we were all excited about the prospect, not necessarily in playing them, but them existing. And we talked about them quite a bit at the beginning. I haven't heard recently how they're doing, hopefully well. It's definitely something that we need in the game. It can't just be leagues, and leagues are great. But, you know, you need to have some high-level play, some, you know, tournaments to help people go infinite or whatever, especially as Arena comes on, if they are truly serious about keeping Magic Online a thing. I think that sort of thing will become important, and burgeoning those player bases for those formats that Arena won't have, at least initially, is important. So hopefully they'll have more efforts like this in the upcoming year to, you know, kind of put their money where their mouth is for those formats.
Yeah, I'm not sure where we could go from here. I do like, it's mainly for Popper that I really like this too. We didn't really get a chance to talk about it last week, that Popper's been gaining a lot of attention in the community for some reason. I don't know why, like Channel Fireball, Cedric, they were all posting about like, oh, do people like Popper? And obviously there was an overwhelming positive outcry. Yeah, we do like Popper. And they were asking, oh, should there be a GP or SCG event for Popper? And that's like, I'm not sure if there ever should be, but it's, I've never seen that question asked from those individuals from a business like Channel Fireball either. And obviously Channel Fireball responded like, oh, we'll do more side events or something on GP, like Sunday or something, like whatever it was. So it's not to the degree there, but I think this is a great stepping stone where people can play these formats in a way that it feels more grand, especially for Popper, because there's really no paper Popper tournaments around here, and this is really their only outlet. Because Legacy and Vintage, there are their places, Eternal Weekend, but Popper, you don't really have anything like that. Next impactful change, number 3, constructed prizes changing from packs to treasure chests. Now, this was a change I remember we were very concerned with when it was introduced. Treasure chests have surprisingly been steady at 2.5 tickets pretty much for a long time now, and the hope was to improve the price of booster packs, which really has not come to fruition. Possibly that our number 2 has something to do with this. You know, this is another thing that I was like, wow, this has been around for a while, and I can't see them going back anytime soon either.
I still get treasure chests. I still get why they could be conceived as a good idea. I just still think that innately they're going to drain the value out of Magic cards and become cheaper. The whole point of introducing play points and chests is to stabilize what you win. What's still very annoying from PPTQs, you know, you win them at the start of the season, packs are worth a bunch, that's great. There's good EV in them. At the end of the season, you go 4-1-1, you're down money, even though you're qualified for the PTQ because of the moving kind of price of booster packs. It's like they replaced a movable currency with a movable currency. It isn't dependent on seasons. Packs change at the end of seasons when people are sick of drafting it. Their packs are worth less because less people are buying them. It's just kind of basic economics. But now there's one that's dependent on how many cards are in circulation. You know, chests are worth more when there's expensive cards in them, but if expensive cards are open, because I think everyone has shown the willingness to open chests. They're not just getting bought and sold in kind of an infinite loop. People are actually buying them and opening them because it's fun. People like to, we can get into a loot box discussion, but people like to gamble. They like to open these things and possibly come out with more. You know, it's just going to lower their price. So I still think it's taking a while, but this is going to end up being bad. I'm very willing to be proven wrong and hope Magic comes out the better because of it, but...
Well, let's not get into a discussion about treasure chests. This is really more about changing from prizes to one prize.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, it's supposed to be more stable than packs, but I'm not sure if it will be. is kind of what I'm trying to get at. I'm not trying to get.
It's definitely more stable than PAX, but it monetizes the secondary market in a way that I dislike. I still dislike them. I still don't think they are a long-term solution. Obviously, I've been wrong in terms of the short-term impact. And, I mean, so who knows how long it can keep up. But it feels unfortunate to me. And we've certainly seen what happens with particular cards. And there's no doubt that this change made them far more prominent and far more of a bigger impact on the economy and the secondary market than they had been previously. And it also will exacerbate any issues that arise if and when they do, because it's such, you know, prizes from constructed events are a key pillar of the economy. I still very much dislike this change. I still very much dislike treasure chests, but I seem to be in the vast minority there, at least while things are good.
So what do you think they should go back to then?
I don't know, because they seem to have these restrictions based on like not being able, I mean, honestly, like tickets would be the best thing that they could do. But there seems to be some gambling issues or legal issues associated.
So what about play points then? And like a mix, didn't at one point they decreased the packs and you would get like a mix of like a pack and some play points or something like that?
I think there was. I think yeah, the bulk of it was play points, which is, you know, sort of a stable secondary currency that they put in. And then they switch to this, which they like because, you know, they don't really pay the prizes in a way. It's much better for WotC because they are giving out secondary market product. Yep. And they don't deal in the secondary market, so they are effectively taking even more money in. Whereas before, if you're giving out play points and things that you can use to re-enter events, then that costs Wizards money. And so in this case, it's the secondary market bearing the brunt of the cost of the prizes.
I think it's really, they're never going to give out event ticks for this stuff. And I think that's the ideal fix, giving out like the online currency. Because one of my big complaints about play points is, you know, I can never cash out of play points. I can never buy cards. I would still love to see a system like Hearthstone where, you know, X amount of play points equals I can just transfer it into a tick. That would be amazing, but kind of defeats the purpose of them a little bit. So I don't know the solution if they're not willing to put ticks up. And they're either not willing to put ticks up because they don't want it to make, you know, ticks can be directly linked to money, so they don't want it to be gambling. They never want to be pinged for gambling. Or it's because just profit. You know, if you're giving out of tickets for events, it's probably a lot easier to go infinite. You know, it's easier to cash out. That's not something they actually want. So it's tough. Like, we are criticizing it, but I think it's tough to fix it so it's good.
It's a very complicated system. It's not, yeah. I'm not saying super complex. Yeah, I'm not saying this is an easy solution here, and it's something that they have struggled with for years, and I think in their minds they found the solution with treasure chest boosters. My main point is that the people that pay for that are the people that are in the secondary market pays the cost of that instead of WotC, which, so it's even better for WotC than before from a profitability standpoint. I think it's an important point. It's you know, it's sort of like, I don't want to get into politics, but it's like a tax cut bill, right? Where you might see yourself as slightly better off, but, you know, all the money might be going elsewhere and you don't really realize it. And so you still think it's a good thing. That's what it feels like a little bit.
All right. That's a good example. I like that. But I mean, as we said before, I think it's just, this one is so complex and I don't know if we're going to be changing, because this has been an ongoing thing that we've been constantly moving this there. All right, we're going to try a few little packs, more play points. No, can't do that. We've been just keep trying to tinker with this. And then I think Wizards is finally happy with this one. And I think we're going to pretty much keep this as steady as we can until, I don't know if anything really else is going to change. It depends.
The only thing that would change it is them, like, the, you know, the economic model crashing, or, you know, the values get so low that the EV of a treasure chest keeps going down.
Right. I don't see that happening anytime soon, so.
Yeah. Hopefully it stays like this, because, of course, everyone likes stable payouts. But the only thing I could see going wrong is eventually treasure chests collapse, and instead of going down in price very slowly, they run out of expensive cards to put in it. But who knows when or if that will happen.
All right, well, let's move on to our next impactful change, which is going to be number two. sets being released online right away. So this change can definitely be argued that it should be number one. It probably, it can't be, but it probably should be, though. I am still shocked. Every time I look at this sentence and look at this change, I can't believe Wizards finally pulled the trigger on this, because it took this long. I mean, we're in 2017, and it took this long for Wizards to make this change. Magic of the Line's been around for, what, 15 years? And we finally got to this point. I mean, some of it was programming, probably. We finally catched up in the technology that, or at least that's what they like us to think, and that's what they say. So we've gotten to this point, oh, we can release the cards on time this time. But I almost thought this was like reserved list level of they would never do type of thing. Because this thing not only affects like paper pre-release, pro tour testing, streaming, Magic Online economy, like you can't underestimate how huge this was for Magic Online.
Yeah, one of the myths that went around for a long time is that this would like break how sacred the pre-release is in shops, in real shops. And from working in a gamer shop before and from, you know, talking to owners and stuff, pre-release is one of the most profitable times a year for them. And they were afraid, and I think Magic Online was afraid, or Wizards were afraid, that if you have it online, why would people go to the real one? But the answer is, if you have a good store that just wants to, you know, be part of the community and is giving its community members good experiences, people still want to be social. You know, humans are social animals and they'll still come to the event for fun. And it means that some people get to do both. They get to have their serious drafts straight away now and also go in for, you know, a good time. What is essentially a massive F&M with your friends and with cool new cards and get them in your hand for the first time. So I think it's affected pre-releases way, 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 way less, if maybe not at all. And that's fantastic. And that was one of the things keeping it back. It's hard again to remember a time where this didn't happen because it's so ridiculously positive.
Let's never go back, please. Please, yeah. Please never go
please
back.
Never go back.
I don't think we'll ever know why it took them so long to do it. And I'm with you. I never thought it would happen. And it's been something that's been asked for since the dawn of Magic Online.
The dawn?
like it's probably the first suggestion they got in the alpha client. And for so long, it wouldn't... And I remember, well, the first set it happened, Lee was tweeting how they had the most players ever on Magic Online. It's like, yeah... Yeah, no Dragon's Maze.
I wonder why. Yeah.
I don't know what changed. Clearly, there's a different, and when we talk about the number one thing, a different mindset on cannibalism of their products.
Yeah, number five, new people running the show as well.
Yeah, new people. Could be. I always thought that they were very timid, like to the point of hurting themselves, timid about Magic Online and what it might do to their... You know, to the paper stuff, and now we've done a complete 180, and now we're gonna give everything for free or something like that. But anyway, in the interim, this is an amazing change, especially for players like myself that don't ever really go to, you know, paper stores. Being able to play it right after you still have the pre-release, right, and then it's the day after, so you still get it early. It's not a week, and we're in the digital age. A welcome to the best change I think that they could have made this year from a positivity standpoint and bringing Magic Online to where it always should have been. But definitely a great change. Definitely the most positive change I think that they've made in a long time on Magic Online.
For me, I've gotten way more excited to play Magic Online when a set comes out. Because if I have to wait a couple weeks, the excitement, I don't care as much, really. I'm like, oh, cool, the sets. But it's been out a couple weeks. I've already watched coverage and things like that. This, it's just, it feels so fresh, having more fun. We don't have those, like, pre-release events anymore, too, which is another thing that probably could put as an honorable mention. That was another change that they made. So there's just no straight-up pre-release events online, either. You draft and you play Constructed, and that's it, which is great.
Yeah, I was just going to echo, I love the pre-release events were gone because they had become such a negative experience online because they were such terrible EV with the excuse, oh, you get to see the cards early. But we don't really. We don't really get to see the cards early. I've already seen them in real life Magic Online, so I love that those events are gone. Again, one more time, please never take this away. This is one of my favorite things to do online. It's also fantastic for streaming from my point of view. There was always a two-week lull there where it's like, well, new set isn't out on Magic Online, and you guys in real life already have the real cards. Should I play a different game?
Right. When I talk about excitement to play, I am so excited to watch everybody stream because everybody streams that first couple days. Yeah. It's great. All right, last but not least, the obvious number one that we're going to get to, the most impactful change to Magic Online, that's Magic Arena. We, like number five, it's not much like an actual change to Magic Online, more of a big picture change to the game as a whole. Other changes we mentioned, if one of those failed, Magic as a game would probably still be a game. But Arena, it has this inherent risk that if it fails or succeeds, the game is going to change tenfold regardless. So, I mean, sure, the game has Magic Online as a crutch, but you can tell Wizards, they need Arena to be a hit.
They've put a lot of money into it, I imagine, as well. On another, you know, they can't have it fail. I imagine they've put a lot of money into this.
Yeah, a lot of marketing. Yeah,
this is going to be them catching up to the other online platforms. So if this fails, we do start to have to worry about how long before, you know, how established does Hearthstone have to be before... I always say Yu-Gi-Oh! And Magic are these weird games because I feel like Yu-Gi-Oh! Almost feeds into Magic in Europe and in America, especially, where people start out playing Yu-Gi-Oh! And as they get older, you know, this isn't for everyone, and I know some people love both games, but as they get older, they get into Magic because it's more complex and it has more of a in-depth competitive scene, and the Pro Tour is a big hook for competitive players and stuff like that. How long before we become Hearthstone to Yu-Gi-Oh! Is what some people are going to worry about. How long before, you know, some mother buys their kids a pack of cards, they play, like, card games are cool. Oh, there's this free one online, let's start playing that. When are we going to become the stepping stone if Magic Arena doesn't work? And I think that's a lot of people's fears.
They're definitely, I wouldn't say they're all in on this, but they are very close to it. Certainly the new executives are... You know, if it doesn't work out, then clearly they're going to get fired. if it doesn't work out, does Hasbro get rid of WotC and divest it somewhere else? That could be the best thing ever. I don't have the sense that Hasbro is a great parent company for Magic in particular. There's no doubt that this had to be number one. We've talked about it a lot. We will continue to talk about it a lot. They continue to hype it. I've heard very little, unsurprisingly, since there's an NDA about the beta and I'm not in it. And I guess if I was, I couldn't really say anything other than I was, but I'm not. And so we're all kind of just playing the waiting game. I do think there's more that WotC could be doing. I think every time they have an arena stream, they answer the question about how it affects Magic Online in a worse and worse way for people that are on Magic Online. Like, I was watching... the last one that they did, and I forget the guy's name, the community manager, straight up said...
Nate Price?
Yeah, he straight up said, like, well, you know, if things go really well, then... or maybe it was the guy he was interviewing that said it, but, I mean, they straight up said what, you know, if you've been reading between the lines, like, they all clearly want it to be the replacement down the road for Magic Online. I have a very pessimistic, an extremely pessimistic outlook of where this is going to end. I don't know if I should say what it is, but, you know, my opinion with respect to Magic Online remains the same. I think we've got, yeah, it's been a couple months, so maybe I still think, you know, a year and a half, two good years, and then some declining years, and that's if Arena's, you know, really performing well. I don't think that it will, but that doesn't necessarily mean I think that things are going to be great for Magic Online either. So I guess I'll leave my sort of conspiracy theory at that. But I mean, obviously I want the game to succeed and I would love to, you know, keep running Card Hoarder as my primary source of income as well. But, you know, I'm aware that is not forever. I think it could have been if things were a little bit different, things had been done differently for Magic Online in the, you know, in the V4 era when V4 was coming out, or if they were doing a V5 and doing that right. But obviously that's not the way it's going to go. And I hope that they really do mean they want to run it parallel and they want to have it be something that we will still want to play. But, you know, there's too many questions. We say this all the time. Too many questions. We just need to wait and see. How good will Arena be? Will they be able to pull off a digital product? What will the drafting look like? What will the pricing look like, if anything? I mean, there's so many questions that, you know, we're just going to keep on keeping on for Magic Online. And if you're in Magic Online, just be aware that it's out there and that it could affect your values, just like the treasure chests, which are probably a bigger short-term risk for you. But, you know that it's out there, and we've had these types of risks for as long as Magic Online has been around. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's again, it's going to be, let's hope it's not a what-if situation. Hope it's one of the changes like, Oh, I cannot believe that. I can't think of what Magic was like without Arena. Let's hope it's like that, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Well, that means the game is succeeding. I understand sure. that it's like Magic Online, your business, it's obviously going to be affected that way, but it's going to be hard to tell what Magic is going to be like if Arena does not succeed.
Yeah, I mean, but I also am concerned, you know, if Arena is a runaway success or even just a success, what does that do for LGSs? I don't think it's good for them, and people don't seem to fear that, which is fine. I mean, it doesn't affect me either way. I'm just concerned about the long-term health of the game. So if we're talking about a short-term success at the cost of them being able to pay people like Morrow that make the game, then I'm concerned. But hey, we'll see.
Yeah, it's a factor that it's definitely going to be one of the more interesting ones to keep our eyes on. But I mean, it's our game stores like the thing that's pushing Magic to the next thing? I don't think so. So that's why it's like something's got to give here, I think.
Yeah.
Sorry, Dave, you were going to say something?
No, it's just it is just so full of possibility and it's impossible to say. There's 100 theories of how this could go and it all depends on so many little things lining up. So this could go incredibly positively or incredibly negatively and we just won't know for another probably another year. We'll still probably be talking about this and its updates and fingers crossed how it's just about an open beta come the end of next year, our show rundown next year. But yeah, it's worrying and exciting at the same time, like we've said multiple times. And I kind of wish we could have put this lower on the list and put, you know, finally after all these years, release events being so early, like being in line with proper Magic dates, proper Magic release dates, first, because it's so impactful for Magic Online, it's been so good for it, made it so much money and so many new users. But this has to be it, because it's not only, you know, integral to the future of Magic Online, it's probably integral to the future of all of Magic.
All right, guys, that's our top five most impactful changes of Magic Online. Good list. I also wanted to do kind of our greatest hits of 2017 as well. We did this last year. I thought this was a lot of fun. So we got a couple categories here. So let's start with favorite set. Who wants to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first. I think I'm going to have to say Arrow of Devastation then. You know, it was my first Pro Tour. I didn't do too well with the set, but it was my first Pro Tour experience, so I'm always going to remember that set. Also, one of the most fun draft formats in a long time, so I think Arrow of Devastation wins it with me. For me, it fixed what was a very bad draft format as well, which was, like, awesome. And I just kind of liked the theme of the sets. Both the sets in that block, but I like the kind of Egyptian god kind of theme from it.
Yeah, the Triple Amonkhet wasn't the best format. I still love the set overall, though. I think it has the best mechanics all around. I love the design of the gods compared to our Devastation. I just love cycling, the cycling lands. The deserts were a huge hit, in my opinion. Maybe not in standard, but in limited and design, I thought they were just great. So I'm actually going to go with Amonkhet. See, the big tiebreaker for me is the Scarab God and our Devastation. So that one sours my opinion more than the how awesome the draft format was.
Scarab God's so great.
Yeah. I hate cards that, like, every deck is just going to splash for this one card. It's like, And again, I'm comparing the how the gods are designed in one set to the other. I thought the gods were perfectly designed in Amonkhet. I didn't like the always coming back to your hand design.
I don't know if you're going to allow this, but my favorite set of this year is Unstable.
Yeah?
Yeah, of course that's allowed. I just didn't think that anybody would pick something outside one of the main sets, but that is totally on the table.
Well, you know, I didn't really play Aether Revolt, Amonkhet, Hour. I don't care for Aether Revolt. Well, not to get into the next category, but Unstable I thought was super well done, very fun. It was the only spoiler season I was, like, kind of excited to see the stuff every day. I ended up buying, or a card holder ended up buying, you know, a booster box for all of our employees, just because I thought it was such a well-done thing. I wanted to reward Wizards for a job well done. I thought it was just a great design and really enjoyed Morrow's attitude about it. And, you know, his talent clearly shows in everything that came out of Unstable.
Yeah, to me, that was a little, it's come out, like, it's too soon to tell if how great that set is, but it's definitely one of the better ones for sure this year, I would say. But for least favorite, I'm going to start us off. I mean, Ixalan has to be, without a doubt, an obvious miss. I mean, this was the least drafted format by me as a fall set. Like, since I got back into the game, by far, for fall sets, drafted way less of this. It's not even close. So the criticism might still be unfair with the power level of Kaladesh, but I'm going to stay optimistic on this set. But for now, Ixalan, least favorite.
So I think Ixalan's an easy one to go for. It's like one of the worst draft sets in a long time and very linear. This was solved a while ago and hasn't developed at all, which sucks in draft formats. But I want to say Aether Revolt, and I want to say Aether Revolt as punishment to Kaladesh block overall. Because as much as I like it thematically, I think it's, you know, the mechanics are too pushed. I think it's led to some of the worst standard in recent memory in a very, very long time. And we're going to feel the ramifications of that for probably another year. So I'm going to say Aether Revolt for the sins of that whole block.
That's actually my exact answer as well. Okay. Energy, hate you. Still hate you. And I will say Ixalan would be my second if you were going to disallow Ixalan was going to be. But, you know, I think I drafted maybe like 8 or 10 drafts. And I know you guys both hated it, and it seems pretty widely hated. But, you know, I also love Cold Snap drafts. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just strange. But I enjoyed Ixalan. Maybe it's also because I hadn't played Magic in so long. And I just like the game. But, yeah, Aether Revolt for the basically exact reasons that Dave said.
Sure, that's fair. I mean, Aether Revolt's definitely a close second for me. I just felt Ixalan was kind of a letdown because it has pirates, got dinosaurs. I thought it was going to have, you know, it's just more of a sour taste just because of the standard impact or the lack thereof. So
that's Aether Revolt's fault and Kaladesh's fault, isn't it?
Somewhat. Maybe. I think it's more Kaladesh's fault than.
Right.
Anyways, I'll transition that to the least favorite card, because my least favorite card is definitely from Aether Revolt, and that's actually Rogue Refiner. I think it's a very poorly designed card. Maybe not poorly designed. I think it's just a boring design. It's just mainly for constructed. It doesn't do anything limited, and it doesn't pull you into green blue at all. So, yep. Rogue Refiner. Don't like it. It's very boring.
It's just like, when you break down the card, it's so overpowered. And it doesn't seem overpowered when you look at it. But if you look at
I don't think it's that overpowered. I think it's
if you look at Elvish Visionary, which is just, it's been good in a bunch of times. I know it's been printed a bunch, but there's a bunch of standard formats where Elvish Visionary is just good. In fact, within the last 2 years, whenever Cans was out, it's further than that now, but 2-3 years, Elvish Visionary was in a good deck then. And that kind of effect is great. So Elvish Visionary exists as a card that's, you know, one in a green. We want to make this 3 mana. Okay, so we need to give it some more upsides because you made a 2-color and 3 mana.
Right, I understand your point here, but like it's not enabling all these colors this deck can play. I mean, Attune with Aether is definitely a worse problem than Rogue Refiner to me. And at least Attune with Aether was a fun card to draft, and so that's why I give it that caveat. But Rogue Refiner did nothing in the draft format, absolute zero.
That's fair. I guess for my least favorite card, I think she's a decent design, so I hate to say it, but Hazoret is like really frustrating to play against, where, you know, your deck isn't built right, or you didn't draw one of your really specific killing indestructible creature answers, and you just died to this 5/4 hasty, can't ever die, has an ability to enable it somehow that gives this inevitability. So Hazoret's caused me a lot of headaches, and I've lost a lot of games that I thought were just slam dunks because they happened to draw their Hazoret, you know? That's just been unfun. It's not a fun, I guess, not process, structured. It doesn't lend itself to fun game structures where you just have to leave yourself dead to a 4-of in your opponent's deck, or you end up putting bad cards in your main deck and stuff a lot.
It's definitely a polarizing card. I guess I disagree. That I like that it forces you to put certain cards in your deck because it's such a powerful card.
That's fair.
Nathaniel.
I hate to suck, but I didn't really have one that I dislike. I've not felt strong. I mean, like, I would defer, or if you made me pick, I would choose, you know, some iconic Masters reprints that I thought were.
Ooh, great. Cop out.
I'll add one thing to this list. I think that a lot of like the hated cards of this year are last year's cards. If someone casts another Attune, like, I'm just not playing standard, because if someone goes turn 1 Attune again, I'm going to throw my new computer out the window. It's so frustrating.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, the Kaladesh cards are definitely.
Yeah. All of Kaladesh block. Every card from Kaladesh block. Which is so weird because I think this time last year I was saying how much fun Kaladesh block had been besides some broken interactions.
Oh, it's because we were we were off the draft format, and the draft format was so great.
Yeah, draft format was so great. I will say that. But yeah, energy. Just we're virtuoso. That's so the card's so stupidly unreasonable. I won't go on an energy rant now. We're talking about this year's cards, but I think a lot of this year's offenders are from last year's set.
Yeah, let's get positive then. Let's go with our favorites.
I guess I'll go first for favorites. Champion of Wits, I think, is my favorite card from this year.
Good pick.
Yeah, it's like a bit unassuming, but I always thought it was going to be good. It enables some pretty funky things. Like, I like the God Pharaoh's Gift deck, even though that led to some bad memories in the World Magic Cup. But the God Pharaoh's Gift deck is really cool. You know, it's doing something unfair, but very easy to fight against it, especially with cards like a Braid in the format. And a lot of that is enabled by Champion of Wits, which has a lot of play to it. A lot of future decisions to be made. You know, it's not like a 3-2, like some of the stupid energy cards with an effect stuck onto it, or 2-3. It's well-statted. And it means even kind of your mid-rangey combo decks have a chance against control decks, you know, coming back on turn 7. By the way, I think that's very reasonable. Its Eternalize is also very well costed, I think, any less than that.
It's perfectly balanced, yeah.
Any less than that, maybe the card starts becoming a bit too good. 7 mana is kind of reasonable for that effect. So I really have enjoyed playing with Champion of Wits when I've got the chance.
From a playability standpoint, I would choose the, I don't know the name of it, but it's a 5/5 for 5 red hasty dinosaur with trample.
Charging Monstrosaur.
Such a fun card.
I never thought I'd hear anybody love that card.
Oh, man. It's because I love aggro decks. I love red aggro decks. I mean, I don't think the dinosaur stuff went over great, but I appreciate that they tried it. That card, every time I got it, it felt great. Every time I cast it, it felt great. So that would be, you know, from a playability standpoint. I mean, the unstable, there's several cards in unstable that are super fun and cool that I would choose from. And just like, I like the design, or I like how things right. went. But having only played Ixalan as far as draft, I didn't draft Kaladesh block at all or Almaket block. So I just didn't interact with those cards as much.
That's a shame, because my favorite cards are going to be from that block. So
I know you really like those draft sets, right? Or those draft blocks.
They're great. I would draft them right now if you gave me a chance. So my favorite, it's not even going to be a favorite card, it's going to be favorite cards. I actually like the Deserts. Obviously, I love them in Limited, but I love how it gave Mono Red another angle of attack. Same thing with the Mill Desert to combat things like Approach of the Second Sun. And I just love non-basic lands that have like subtle utility, that they're not like overpowered like Search of Azkanta, but it's just leave subtle gameplay. They can tap and you have to pay life for those ones, and then of course the ones that cycle, also awesome. So love the Deserts, love everything about them. And let's close this off with, actually no, we got two more, so let's go with favorite mechanic. And I'll start us off cycling. That's kind of a cop-out answer, so I'm not gonna choose cycling. I guess I'll go with Exert again. That's from that Limited format. Honorable mention to Embalm. I also love Embalm. And I just thought Exert really shined in Hour Devastation. Just really easy to understand. Doesn't have to be color specific. Fun gameplay decisions. Maybe not for Glorybringer, but in Limited, love the tension.
I think my favorite. I have a least favorite. I'm trying to think of favorite.
Ooh, what's your least favorite besides energy?
Yeah, energy. We won't say energy. I think my least favorite is Enrage. For two reasons. Yep. I think it's a little lazy. It is just a mechanic out of another very popular game, but that's going to happen. You know, a lot of crossover space happens. Just the way this Limited set turned out, it just wasn't an ability that mattered, like, at all. Nope. At all. Like, did not care. The setup cards weren't good enough for it. Sometimes you got the, like, Pounce, but Pounce ended up actually being quite a weak card in the set. Even if you did, it didn't matter that much because the games weren't grindy, so this little bit of value never ended up mattering. The card that we thought would see constructed play, or Jar Raptor, is just a lot worse than Bristling Hydra because of, you know, energy. And just because it can get killed and Bristling Hydra can't, even without energy, as a kind of thing we can point at. So it's not showed up in constructed. It was bad and limited. It might as well kind of not exist. It's not that the idea behind it isn't fine. Like, there's nothing inherently wrong. It's not broken. It's not stupid. It's just poorly executed, I think.
it was just a shame that Dinosaurs wasn't the thing. I mean, Nathaniel picked a Dinosaur as his favorite card, but like it was good just because it fit into non-Dinosaur decks. That was just kind of the disappointment.
Well, like I said, you know? The Dinosaurs didn't work out, but I appreciate that they tried it because I love Dinosaurs. Yep. I don't like them.
Oh, me too.
How they were done, but yeah, hey, you know, you can't have a home run every time.
Agreed.
If we're not accepting cop-out answers, then I guess I would choose Treasure. I think it would be between Treasure and Explorer. I'd like cards that
Explorer's really good, yeah.
Make things less or more, harder to kind of get monoscrewed and stuff like that. And the strategies that went around those were really intricate and interesting, especially the Treasure deck. I don't think I was good enough to draft it. Or maybe had I played the format more extensively, I could. But I'd like those types of mechanics that make things smoother and you can play more Magic, which is really helpful.
Yeah, if Treasure was in like a different format than Ixalan, I might like that one better. But in the context of this format, it just didn't have its time to shine. So I do like the design of it, though.
I think, I don't know if this is acceptable as an answer because it's not really a printed mechanic, but I like the flip enchantment mechanic from Ixalan. I like
Transform.
Yeah, I guess we could call it Transform. Right, it does say transform on the card, so yeah, the transform mechanic.
Let's call it what it's called. Sure, I guess we can call it that.
I forgot that it actually says transform on it. Right, I forgot that it actually says those words on it. So I'm not usually a big fan of double face cards because of practicality. I love their design. I just hate their practicality. But Search for Iskanta and what's the white one called? The one mana one.
Legion something.
Legion's Landing. I think Legion's Landing and Search for Iskanta are two of my favorite cards in Standard. I think their play patterns are really cool. I think that you get the perfect amount of reward for the perfect amount of effort for both. They're very well balanced. They're both going to see future play. And yeah, I really like that.
I thought they were all the Transform cards were really good too. I liked them quite a bit.
Yeah. The green one is a little bit too safe for me, but I understand why they did it. So all the other ones are probably going to see play. The green one transforming at the end of turn probably means it will never see play. But I understand, like, it's a very broken ability if it just transforms straight away or in the upkeep where you can just have access to the mana straight away. So I do understand why they did that.
Agreed. All right, well, that's going to wrap up pretty much our kind of favorite, least favorite things. I wanted to finish with the final grade for Magic and kind of any resolutions for 2018. I guess I'll start. I'm going to give Magic a B-. I think it was definitely a step down from last year. We had to endure more Standard bans, and Energy, hopefully, is not going to be a staple in Standard anymore, but hopefully it proves me wrong. Yeah, as we said, Aether Revolt, Ixalan were definitely misses, and luckily, Amonkhet and Hour Devastation were one of the better like draft formats that we've had in the past few years. So, Unstable definitely stood out as supplemental sets. I thought all the other supplemental sets were very forgettable. I don't even remember what's in the Modern Masters set that came out. Same thing with Commander, so whatever. Very average year for Magic, I thought. I thought nothing too much stood out, and it's hard to say with Arena what implications that has. And as far as resolutions for me, I would like to start making YouTube videos and stream more. I probably said the same thing last year, but I will include directing streams. So I got some paid gigs coming up in 2018 that I'm really excited about. Directing a few fighting game streams and some more Rocket League, hopefully Overwatch, and I think the ultimate goal is to get back into Magic coverage in some way. So that's my resolutions for 2018.
That's an awesome resolution. Magic's been a real mixed bag this year because I haven't enjoyed certain aspects of it and I have enjoyed others. I got onto the Pro Tour, which is a huge thing for me in the World Magic Cup, but I had mixed results on both of the higher levels of play and in general did not hit the heights I want to, and I'm not playing as well as I want to. My content creation started strong with getting partnership. I think almost 12 months. It was like January, February, I got partnership. But at the same time, in the last 3 months of the year, I've really let that slide, and that's something I need to improve on massively. So I'm going to give it a middle ground, right? A C. I've hit some highs. I've hit some big lows. Magic itself has hit some big highs and big lows this year. So I'm going to give it a C right in the middle. As far as resolution, I think my little rant there kind of points out what I want to do. I'm not playing good enough Magic for my goals, which is making very high quality content and getting back on Pro Tour, being some kind of pro level. So I want to find ways to improve at Magic and really try and focus on that instead of being just down on not being good enough. And I want to really up my content creation game. It's not really good enough for making a living off of it, and I need to improve that a lot.
Good stuff, Dave. Nathaniel.
So we're are we rating like Magic Wizards, Magic Online?
I was, but I do like Dave's kind of grade upon yourself or grade
A plus
upon your your own lookout onto Magic, I guess. Yeah.
Well, let me at least start with Wizards. I would agree with you, Connor. It seemed kind of like a middling year. You know, way too many sets. Like, so, we're in a tough period because Kaladesh Black was so busted. You know, I've been somewhat disappointed by the team series and stuff like that, even though, you know, we're fairly invested in it. So, you know, I think a middling grade, whatever scale you're on, middling grade for this year. It was nice to end on a good note. Like I've mentioned many times, I've really enjoyed Unstable. And, of course, I really enjoyed Vintage Masters Draft, and that was a great surprise. For me, as far as like me personally, I mean, it's pretty tied in with Card Hoarder, honestly. I the year was great, for the most part. Things continue to do really well. I mean, hopefully that will continue, and that remains to be seen, of course. But, you know, there's nothing I can do about some of that stuff, so we just keep on keeping on for as long as we can keep on keeping on. But, you know, from a Card Hoarder's perspective, I certainly would give it an A. Not to like, I'm not trying to like toot my own horn, but things just went well. For my resolution, I think, you know, I mentioned that we ended on a sour note sort of in the community, or sorry, on a positive note with respect to the sets, but the community aspects that have come out recently have kind of dragged, I think, people down quite a bit, understandably. And so from a resolution standpoint, for myself slash Card Hoarder, I'm hoping that we can do some stuff next year that can counteract that and help everybody move past it and sort of, I think I mentioned in that cast, you know, a rising tide lifts all ships and just, you know, bring more positivity and promote positivity in the community. And, you know, hopefully we can kind of move past and grow from the trials and tribulations of this year and many years past, it sounds like, for a lot of people. So.
Guys, I love the answers. This guy actually got me really pumped for 2018. I think the most thing I'm excited about too is the Team Pro Tour. I can't wait for that. That's going to be, I think, a make or break thing for Magic, I think, because that could maybe change some things to come, what could be for the Pro Tour and for the game in general. So really excited about that. And as for Card Hoarder and for the podcast, though, I thought we've did some great stuff this year. I think the main topic, though, that was a huge success to come out of 2017 is, of course, Card Hoarder After Dark. And the people want to hear it. They didn't get to hear it last week, so we're going to do a two-for-one this week. So, Dave, take it away with our Card Hoarder After Dark.
We're listening in on radio.
Welcome to Card Hoarder After Dark, your radio station for mature adults. Conversations and content. I am your host, Dave C, and today we'll be delving deep into the psyche of what is your favorite Christmas movie, gentlemen. That is what we're going to be looking at. I know we did movies before, but it's that time of year, and we all sit around on the couch eating too much food with our family, watching movies, and I'd love to hear what your favorite Christmas movie is.
Since Nathaniel didn't get to hear the question ahead of time, I already got some time to
think
about this.
I'm already there. I already know. Well, it's embarrassing now, so you go ahead and start.
No, it's not embarrassing. Come on.
Go ahead. You start, please.
All right. For me, it's always a toss-up between A Christmas Story and Home Alone. Nice. It'd probably be A Christmas Story. Not that I think it's a good movie. It's just I have good memories watching it with my brother growing up as kids. That's really all it is.
It reminds me of someone was like said Die Hard was their favorite Christmas movie. It's a very manly movie.
Yeah, I would say that, but it is a Christmas movie, but it's not something that I watch on Christmas all the time.
Yeah. I'm gonna go with two, because one's somewhat embarrassing. So the first one is Love Actually, which is the embarrassing one. It's like it's a rom.
That's not embarrassing, come on.
You don't think so? Okay, good.
No.
Love Actually is great.
It's a great movie. There's so many good quotes in it, and I don't know, it's a very uplifting movie. I like to watch it once a year if I can. The other, which I'm hoping to watch with Max this year, I don't know, he's probably still not quite old enough for it, but Elf. With Will Ferrell is super good. It's hilarious, but I think it might be a little bit above him, and he might just be asking me questions the whole time or not interested because it's not animated. But I'm hoping that we can watch it and enjoy it together this year.
I just watched Elf and I forgot my favorite bit, and it's such a I have a bunch of favorite bits from it, But the crying walrus when he leaves on the piece of ice, I just love it. I can't. I don't know why it makes me laugh so much, but the really over the top, just the over the top cartoon laugh, and you're like, his eyes are on top of his head, so he just like throw his fins over the top of his head to say sorry to cry, and it's. I just think it's really funny. I do love that movie.
In that same scene, there's a scene where he's like, bye, buddy. Hope you find
it. Yeah, that's when the narwhal just comes narwhal. Up. Yeah.
I had a bet with my wife about whether narwhals actually existed, and I won, because of course they exist.
Yeah, they exist. But it seems like such a perfect fantasy animal, right?
I know, but she's like, she thought they were like, you know, fantastical creatures. I'm like, no, narwhals for real.
They're used in a lot of like fantasy.
They are. Well, they seem like they don't exist. It's like a unicorn in the water, right? I mean, it's...
Yeah.
So, Dave.
Yeah, no, Dave.
Dave.
So, I'm going to pick pretty Christmassy movies, but in general, I think Christmas is just a time for like great movies. You're just sitting around watching great movies. And there's some movies that feel Christmassy, even though they're not, just because you end up watching them at this time of the year all the time. But Muppet's Christmas Carol has to be number one, I think. Nice. This changes year from year. Sometimes I'm in a Scrooged mood, you know, with Bill Murray. But this year, I think Muppet Christmas Carol is number one for me. Anything Muppets. I haven't watched Muppets Treasure Island in a while, but I'll definitely watch that soon. Again, that's a fantastic movie. And number two is It's a Wonderful Life.
That is actually one I have not watched somehow. So that I need to do that. I'm sorry. That's a resolution for myself.
Yeah, it's just a fantastic movie, full stop, that happens to have a Christmas theme, opposed to a good Christmas movie.
All right, well, I said two for one. We have to do our last week's topic just to fit it in. And it was going to be the topic of Star Wars, and we the topic was supposed to be top three favorite Star Wars properties.
Yeah.
So let's rattle them off. I mean, I did see the new Star Wars movie. I'm not expecting
to talk about that. Before you say anything, I haven't seen it.
That's so fine.
No spoilers.
That's what I
told all my employees. If anybody, you know, we have a chat. I said, if anybody spoils anything for me, you're fired. I'm dead serious about that.
Now, I was just about to get that the disclaimer. I'm not going to spoil any of it. It's not in my top three. That's all I'll say about it. So, you know, it'd be Empire, New Hope, and it would actually be Jedi as my third favorite. And New Hope and Empire, they switch probably every other day.
So we're saying properties, so we're saying anything from Star Wars can be...
Yep.
Isn't there a Christmas special or something?
Yeah, it's the worst thing of all time.
It's the worst
thing. I still haven't seen it, so I can't opine.
It's not worth watching.
Well, it's worth watching because of how...
I have to watch it now. I'll watch anything Star Wars, no matter how bad it
have
is.
Have fun.
I think, properties-wise, Knights of the Old Republic might be my favorite thing. It's a game. It was out on the original Xbox. It's like one of the first RPGs that... I can have a pretty short attention span when it comes to games that aren't magic. And I just like sat there and played it for hours each day and finished it through multiple times. You know, Knights of the Old Republic 1 and 2 are fantastic. A New Hope has to be number 2, like the best movie. When I always get the titles confused. New Hope is the second one, right?
It's the first one.
Episode 4.
That's episode 4?
Yeah,
What's the
original
second one?
Star Wars, the first.
Empire Strikes Back.
Empire. So I keep getting Empire and New Hope's titles confused. But Empire is probably the best movie. And I really enjoyed the Clone War cartoons. Cartoon Network, they were like 10, 15 minute cartoons, and they were fantastic. So I think that might be in my list, but I might also be very hipster, and maybe it should just be a bunch of the movies.
No, it's in my list too. I've watched them once when Max was younger, and I'm currently rewatching them with him.
Oh, cool.
They're very good. The it's like six seasons. I think we're in the fourth season. You know, it's aimed more at kids, obviously, and it's animated. You know, that part of the Star Wars story was not told well in the first, you know, episode 1, 2, and 3.
No.
So seeing it and getting the storylines is super cool. So if you haven't seen it, if you like Star Wars and you haven't seen the Clone Wars, the TV show, I would definitely recommend it. It's very high quality, in my opinion. Potentially
I actually haven't,
so movies.
I'll check it out.
I think they're potentially better than the movies. As a whole.
The prequels?
Well, I don't mind the prequels. I mean, I'm not one of those, like, they don't exist people.
I am.
Are you? Like, what prequels? There's no prequel, is there? And you gotta say, I think any discussion about Star Wars, you gotta say that Disney taking over, like, they're definitely making high-quality films. Whether or not you think they're the best of all time or whatever, they're definitely high quality. And in number, I think we're gonna just get so much more, which is exciting. If you like Star Wars, I think it's exciting. Some people might think it is overkill.
Yep. That's the perfect way to sum up this film as well.
Okay. Interesting. So Empire was always my favorite. Certainly of the first six episodes, Empire was also my favorite. And it's funny to rewatch them in the context a little bit, but definitely still up there. So I would put that in there. I'm gonna throw a little curveball in here. I enjoy almost anything Star Wars, but there's this little-known game called Star Wars Combine, and I played it for pretty extensively for, I think, like 10 years.
Is this a PC game or what?
It's a browser-based sim.
Oh,
never heard of it.
I always describe it to people as, you're going to hate it. let me start with this. You're going to hate it, and then let me tell you what it is. But it's basically like, it's an RP game. I don't really RP, so I don't actually RP in it. But it was almost like an economic sim, at least for my purposes, and sort of like a political sim. You could do stuff in the game, like your character can do stuff. But, you know, I when I played it, it was all about like starting from nothing and building up an empire, so to speak, or a government in this case. It's really grueling. I ended up stopping. Like, it took a tons of time. But it was back when I was at a job where I had nothing to do all day, and I found it. I'm like, yes. And, you know, it's like, your character, like, you do something and it might take an hour, it might take 5 days, and so then you come back when that's done, and then you do have your character do something else. It's almost like kind of like Neopets.
It's one of those games. Okay.
Well, it's not like Neopets. It's not like Neopets, but anyway, I wouldn't recommend anybody play it, but I have nostalgia for it, and I really
does it still exist?
It does.
Yeah,
sure,
I just
does.
Looked it up. I just looked it up there.
I might have to check it out.
I think it's just swcombine.com. Well, my name on there is Dornzek, though I do not really play. I don't really play, but you have to choose a name. You can't have a username. You have to choose a name that sounds like a name, and then you're a character. But anyway, you're gonna hate it, guaranteed. I would say 1 out of 1,000 people that join it actually like it and stay. But, you know, it was sort of right place, right time, and then I got into it, and I retired, like, when we bought Card Hoarder, basically, is when I retired, because I was like, I can't do this anymore. But, you know, like, some of the people that I spoke with, I was still friends with. So I'm going to put that as my number 3 as a little curveball.
Okay. Good picks all around. Really enjoyed. This is probably one of the better Card After Darks.
I'd like to end the Card Hoarder After Dark segment by just putting a fact out there in the universe that many people will not accept, but they're just blind, is that Jar Jar Binks is strictly better than the Ewoks. When it comes to these comedy side characters, put that out there.
No,
the universe. Strictly better and less annoying.
I'll pick Ewoks any day.
Me too. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. I mean, well, I will warn you, if you do watch the Clone Wars, Jar Jar is in those.
No.
Having said that, he's significantly less annoying, and he's only in a few episodes. But he's still there. Okay. He's still there. You gotta take the good with the bad, you know, or the bad with the good, rather.
Right. All right, guys. Good episode. I think that's going to wrap it up for this episode. So, of course, we're going to have to remind everybody about upcoming events on Magic Online this week. Of course, there's new stuff still coming out, even though it's the end of the year. So no more Vintage Masters, unfortunately, but Vintage Cube is out. Vintage Holiday Cube is always a fun time. For premier events, there's a sealed PTQ on Saturday. And for context, hit me up on Twitter @ConnorPOdonnell. Check out the other podcasts I work on, Game Podcast with Jerry Thompson and Brian Gottlieb. I edit the cast, and generally it's out every Friday on StarCityGames.com. And the wrestling cast that Dave and I work on, it's called WCW vs. NWO Podcast. We're reviewing the NWO era of WCW pay-per-view by pay-per-view, so check that one out. Dave, Nathaniel, where can our listeners contact you guys?
They can find me on Twitch on there 5-6 days a week, trying to be more disciplined and keep that actually as a true statement. It hasn't been necessary over the last month. Well, I'm Dave C on there, that's SEA, and on Twitter, I'm DaveC89, and, you know, come shout at me about my Jar Jar comment. Come at me, I don't care. And a Merry Christmas to all our viewers also out there. You won't be hearing from us until after Christmas, I guess.
Yeah, you spoiled it. I was going to leave that to the end, sorry. No more episodes until 2018, yes.
For me, you can email me at Nathaniel@cardhoarder.com. And maybe we should add for one of my resolutions for 2018 to create a Twitter account. And I will say, I did when I was doing the drafting, like, I wanted to share more decks, but I felt a little bad because we got some unfollows. I felt bad for Aaron because I'm like... you know, I mean, not everybody cares what Nathaniel drafted, you know, doing VMA, even though I was like a giddy schoolboy.
Who would unfollow you for cool deck lists?
I don't know. I don't know people that don't care what I draft, which there are probably numerous people. So I felt a little bad for Aaron because I'm like, hey, just so you know, I'm gonna do a little tweeting, and I put like my name on them too, and then I'm like, okay, go get those followers back. my bad. But so I didn't spam it as much as I wanted to, but it did underscore to me the need to have my own Twitter account. So let's put that on my resolution list for 2018. So I have a whole year now to create that account.
Awesome. Mark it down. All right. That's going to wrap up this episode, and it's going to wrap up 2017. And of course, you can find the show every week on cardholder.com. So no episode next week. So until then, thank you for listening, and we will see you in 2 weeks.